Hey, it's Napoleon Dynamite. I guess you're listening to Skip to the End. That's what I would do to this podcast, is skip to the end. That's my call, but you do whatever your heart tells you.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 52 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And it is our two-year anniversary today.
2 years.
Happy birthday, guys.
Thank you. I'm glad that you've separated us from you because you've been here 2 episodes, so don't be getting giddy.
It's not the same, is it?
No. Put your drink down. Stop it. Me and Ben are celebrating the 2 years of hard work and success. You know what I mean?
Riding on the coattails.
This is the second episode of the Gemma era. Gemma, a.k.a. Popcorn Heart, a.k.a. Poochie.
I'm never going to die, is it?
Are you glad to be back?
Absolutely.
How are you feeling rolling into your second episode?
A lot more calmer, I think, than last week. A lot more calmer. But also as well, it's, I think, seeing the reactions on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram have been absolutely lovely. Really has, and I thank everybody for their kind words. So yeah.
People have really taken to you, Gemma. It's been very, very positive response online. Mark, when people are listening to this episode, where the hell are we going to be?
In America, mate.
We're in America, aren't we?
In New York City. We've got loads planned. We're gonna talk about it loads when we get back. But in the meantime, do check our Twitter, our Facebook, our Instagram, because we're going to WWE have given us tickets to go to SummerSlam, which is still saying it out loud doesn't seem real.
Lucky sons of bitches.
I'm going to be going to Philadelphia. I know, Ben, you're going around Brooklyn and here, there, and everywhere. I'll be going to New Jersey visiting Kevin's shop. I will inundate Twitter with pictures of me trying to look like Jay and Silent Bob.
I'm going to a recording of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert as well. I don't know who the guests are yet, but I'm hoping there'll be some like big movie stars there as well. So it's all going to be very interesting, and we're going to cover it in detail next time round.
And I'm just going to go to the Newland Shopping Centre in Kettering.
Basically the same, isn't it? Basically the same.
Exactly.
Before we get started, I just wanted to talk about my little brother. I've mentioned my little brother a lot on this podcast. He's 11 years old, and he and I spent the weekend together last weekend. And it was the day after, or a couple of days after, we'd released our last episode. And he said to me, "Oh, Ben, so you liked Suicide Squad then?" "Yeah." He went, "Oh, did you give it 7 out of 10? "Yeah." "Did Mark give it 8 out of 10? "Yeah." "Did Gemma give it 7 out of 10? I was like, "You don't know Gemma. What are you talking about?" Turns out, on the sly, he'd then gone and listened to the episode. Now, I don't know the episodes that these shows are really for 11-year-olds, per se, but he did. He listened to it on the sly. And he really enjoyed it, he said. And then I asked him about what he thought to the topic, and he went, "Oh, I didn't care about documentaries, so I skipped to the end of that section."
Oh,
I was
like, "Oh, name check.
Good lad, good lad, good lad." And then he got to talking about how he went onto iTunes and was looking at all our reviews, and he was like really impressed that we had all 5-star reviews. He was like, "There were no 4-star. They were all 5-star. Everyone loves it." I was like, "Yeah, because we're pretty good." And he's really starting to get into movies, and he's picking up on things. He's really smart, actually, because he's just watched Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, good.
Which
good
he loved it. And he said that it really reminded him of Home Alone. And then it dawned on me that they're both written by John Hughes, and he'd sort of spotted the similarity in tones, which I'd never really put together, but his mind kind of works that way.
I'm very worried about my position when it's going to the end now.
Yeah, you're just keeping the seat warm until he's ready for his moment in the spotlight.
I want to get him on one of the episodes.
We will
just
do.
For a little, that's just awesome. His insight to what he thinks to stuff.
I think we'll maybe record his thoughts on Rogue One, because he's the biggest Star Wars nut in the land.
Let's do it.
I think we're forgetting something. So we're 3 minutes into this podcast. Was that just not Napoleon Dynamite? Do you know what I mean? It's like we went from having Kevin Smith, which was incredible, to now Napoleon Dynamite, which, I'm sorry, but that was a hell of an intro.
That was
super. It's amazing. Yeah. So cool.
Amazing.
John Heder himself, Napoleon Dynamite.
God.
Very, very cool.
So as it's our anniversary, I reckon this episode is going to be quite fun. You know, not forced fun, but I can see that, you know, the main reviews are fun film. What are we reviewing?
We're going to be reviewing Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, which is a very fun, very silly film. We're continuing in that vein with the rewatch as well. Rewatch that I picked is Step Brothers, brilliant Will Ferrell film. We're going to be doing round two of Movie Mass Debate. Got to be careful how you say that. Gemma, who are we mass debating over this time round?
It's only bloody Bruce Willis.
It is Bruce Willis. That's going to be very good. Mark, what's our topic of conversation?
Not as fun. That's killed it straight away.
Yeah.
It's top 3 serial killers from film.
Yes, that's going to be great. We're also going to do a very brief, review of Sharknado 4, because there's only so much I'm willing to say, quite frankly. We've got listener questions, we've got a prize giveaway. We're going to go over, once again, our top five all-time films briefly, because it's something we tend to do at the end of each year, at the start of a new year. And we're also going to play the second round of our brilliant new quiz, Get Fact. So, let's get started.
So to kick things off on this episode, it's topic time. Now, I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I think I've picked a killer topic here.
Oh, Christ.
And social media have already said it's a topic to die for.
Jesus. Never ends. It never
you
ends.
You slay me, Mark. You slay me.
Oh, don't help him. I can't have two of you.
You just murdered that joke.
Oh, right, I'm out.
It is top three serial killers in film. Now, I chose this basically because I think there's a massive range. I do believe there'll be crossover, but I know that, Ben, you're not the biggest horror fan in the world, but you like certain films that have serial killers that aren't so much horror, they're kind of thrillers. Or this is a topic I'm really looking forward to, and all week I've kind of changed my mind again. But Gemma, I'm going to throw it to you first. Tell me your first choice.
My very first choice is Beverly R. Sutphin from Serial Mom. Kathleen Turner herself. I had fun with this topic, and this one came up at the very top of the list for me. For those of you who haven't seen Serial Mom, please see it because it is a lot of fun.
I don't think I have seen it.
It's directed by John Walters, so it's very camp, very kitschy, but it's a lot darker than some of the stuff he's done, like Hairspray. But basically, Kathleen Turner is a stay-at-home suburban mother, a very clean-cut, very Americana. And she's got a killer side to herself. She kills people for the most silliest of reasons. So, for example, she kills a lady because she didn't rewind Annie to the very beginning of a VHS. She kills her daughter's supposed boyfriend because he's seen someone else.
I've never seen this film.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's so much fun. And she loves Barry Manilow, but she kills someone with a leg of lamb. You know, she's...
As you do.
Yeah, but she's just an absolute maniac underneath the sort of the facade that she has. But I wholeheartedly recommend it. It's just a fun serial killer. Well, there's nothing fun about killing people, surely.
You can't beat a fun serial killer. To be fair, I empathise with her on the not rewound tape. That makes me want to go out and kill him, honestly.
No one should ever have to pop a VHS in or it doesn't really work on DVDs now, but no one should have to put a videotape in and see the end credits as the very first scene.
Back in the day, Blockbuster had a policy. You had to rewind it when you gave it back.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then there'd be loads of chumps who didn't. It's filling me with rage just thinking about it.
Remember they had a little chute that you'd leave it in so you couldn't be asked to do it because they didn't give it to the member of staff who's like, look, I can see you haven't done it.
Yeah.
You just put it in 11 o'clock at night and think, well, I'll just pay the $2.50 fine. It's fine.
Yeah, and nothing rages me quite like when someone wears white after Labor Day. So... Infuriating.
That's a great one to start because I will go and check it out.
Yay, excellent.
I like being introduced to new stuff.
It's a lot of fun.
My picks are really, really obvious, I will say. Generally, I try to look for things that are kind of out of the box or, a bit wider thinking, but I've gone with dead obvious ones here and I'm proud of it. My first one has to be Patrick Bateman.
Yeah.
Christian Bale in American Psycho. Now, I know quite a few people have said this on the social media as well, haven't they? And some people have been arguing, saying you don't know whether he actually is a serial killer or whether this takes place in his mind. You don't know if he's just mental. Mm-hmm. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me one way or the other. As far as I'm concerned, you see him on film kill these people. He therefore fits the criteria of being a serial killer. And he's the best one. It's thanks in part to Christian Bale's utterly unhinged performance, which is just... unsurpassed. It's a fantastic performance, but it's also thanks in part to the source material. The original novel by Bret Easton Ellis is a great book that just destroys 80s consumerism. Yes. It's a superb book and an amazingly well-drawn character. And it's arguably one of my favourite books of all time, and I was worried about whether it would translate well to screen or not, and I thought they did a brilliant job, and they couldn't have cast anyone better than Bale. I think at one point Leonardo DiCaprio was in the running for the part, and he would have nailed it.
That would have been quite interesting to watch, yeah.
Yeah, but Bale is just so, so good as Bateman.
Mm-hmm. He's even my wallpaper on my Popcorn Heart Facebook page as well.
It's my favourite scene in that whole film is the business card. I just absolutely love it that someone's gone one better than him, who's slightly better, sort of, is it embossed better or something like that?
Yeah.
And I just love it. And like you just said about how you're kind of, there's a good serial killer. I'm always kind of warming to Bale. I'm cheering him on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I shouldn't be. It's the soundtrack as well, and the way he's always so like getting himself ready and putting his outfit on. And I'm always like, I love this guy, but I shouldn't be because he's absolutely killing people in the worst way possible.
Yeah.
One of my favourite lines from it's in both the book and the film, I think. It's kind of shows how people don't really listen or don't really know what's going on around them. So one person asks him what he's into, and he says murders and executions. But what the person heard was mergers and acquisitions. Because people just don't pay attention to what's around them. It's such a darkly comic film. That is why you kind of fall for him, or you want him to succeed, because it is a darkly comic film, and he is very much the definition of an anti-hero.
Mm, the way how he kind of acts incredibly normal whilst he's prepping up to kill Jared Leto's character whilst listening to Huey Lewis and the News. It shouldn't work, but it does. Yeah, it shouldn't be funny, but it is in a kind of way. It's
quirky, isn't it?
I'd forgotten that he kills Jared Leto. Yeah. That might be one of the reasons why I love this film so much. It's one of the reasons why I love Fight Club so much, when he gets his face turned into hamburger. I just love to see Jared Leto in pain. Hey, that's just me.
I'm going to kick things off with a film that I only saw a couple of years ago, but it had a massive impact on me. So it's George Harvey, played by Stanley Tucci in The Lovely Bones.
Very good choice.
That was a harrowing portrayal of a serial killer, and the way that he kind of raped and killed young girls, but the way he used that underground to kind of lure them in and had like Coke bottles and toys and stuff to like bring them in. Yeah. And the fact that we thought the girl got away, spoilers if you haven't seen the film, but he did actually murder and rape her. Mm-hmm. But this guy, I think one of the first real performances I saw him in was stuff like Devil Wears Prada, as this real sort of happy, really kind of, I warmed to him straight away. But in this film, he actually terrified me. And the way he switched and just the whole film, I thought, I don't know if he's done it or not. I don't know if he's actually done it or if he's a bit messed up or how messed up he is. And then as the story evolves, and literally by the end, I was like, this is chilling.
He's just so manipulative in this character as well. And actually, I've read the book as well. The book is much more graphic than what the film portrays as well. And the way how he does hold this character, you're right, it chills your blood.
I haven't seen it. Was this Peter Jackson?
Yeah, yes. It's amazing.
It was visually beautiful as well.
I definitely will check it out. I don't know why I've not seen it, actually, because I do love Stanley Tucci as well. Mm-hmm. You know, you say how he's got like cola bottles and stuff to lure in the kids. I was going to say, is that why you're always carrying Haribo? You have always got Haribo on you.
Well, Gemma's choice for the second one is Mark from Skip to the End. But yeah, you were looking a bit blankly at me, and I was thinking, come on, dude, like, this is Tucci, you know, you love this guy.
Yeah,
I'm
no,
surprised.
I haven't seen it. I know, I really do want to see it. Who's the main guy in it?
Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
Is it Mark Wahlberg? Yeah. Because I'm sure it was meant to be Ryan Gosling at first, and then he dropped out or something, or got fired.
It's a really, really good, well-made film.
I really want to watch it now.
I'm going to check it out.
Gemma, your second choice.
Yeah, so I've gone back to the horror genre, and for me, it's Pamela Voorhees from Friday the 13th, Part 1.
Nice.
Because everybody always gets Jason as the main killer in the whole Friday the 13th series. But it was his mum that started it all off. And the reason why she's in my list, when you first look at her, she's this sweet little old lady that's, you know, there to help any kid in peril or anything. But she's actually a mass murderer. You know, she slits kids' throats. She throws an arrow through Kevin Bacon's throat, bless him. And even, like, chucks a hefty axe to the head on a very annoying screaming girl in the shower.
You say it so casually.
Like, you know, well,
just an axe in the head in the shower.
But she is, honestly, if you watch that film, before she screams, it's the most pathetic scream. It's like,
like your one last week when we announced the rewatch.
Double.
I wonder what the worst thing to ever happen to Kevin Bacon on screen is. If it's having the arrow thrown through his throat or appearing in those awful EE adverts.
Second choice.
Because they fill me with dread and horror.
I'd take an arrow to the throat if that was the case. But she's brilliant. She's so dangerous yet so unassuming when you first see her. And even at the final fight as well, she holds her own. Mm. Bloody hell, she holds her own. But she gets her head locked off, and then Jason kind of is tagged in, shall we say.
Tagged in.
Yes. But yeah, so my choice is Pamela Voorhees.
My next pick, I'm going to... You might argue with this. He is a serial killer, but he's paid to be. He's a hitman.
Okay.
But I still think that counts.
That counts.
I'm going with Anton Chigurh, Javier Bardem in No Country for Old Men.
Brilliant.
Nice.
He's just so cool. And I don't mean cool as in, you know, the kids all love him, he's cool. I mean cool as in calm.
Yeah.
And, you know, dispassionate, the way he goes about his business. He never seems to be angered or upset in any way. He can be mildly frustrated at times if people don't play his game with the coin. But he's just so level. And then he just pops you in the head with a, like a cattle prod. It's insane, that performance. It's the best thing that Bardem's ever done.
Yeah.
He is magnificent in that role. And we've discussed it before, but one of the things that makes him such a weird, terrifying presence, not only being dispassionate, but that haircut.
I was about to say, that wedge.
You have to be calm in order to pull off a bowl cut.
Yeah, it is an insane cut. And I love the fact that that wasn't scripted. He just decided that's what the character should look like.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he turned up on set with that ludicrous bowl cut, which I assume he got his mum to do with like a salad bowl and cut around the edges. It looks terrible, but it adds to this kind of... It makes him eerier. It makes him seem more otherworldly, because what normal human would choose that haircut?
No, it's called the mushroom cut in the hair industry.
Good Lord. And I just absolutely love him. I love that film. It's an amazing film, all ends up, but he is truly terrifying.
He's so scary in it. Mm. He's probably one of the best sort of serial killers that actually give you that sense of dread when you're watching it.
Mm. Yeah. You can't... What a great... I want to watch that film now.
Making notes here.
I'm also thinking on the next game show, whatever we come up with, the loser has to go and get their hair cut like that.
My
to make
God.
It a bit more exciting. Hang and we'll on. Rig it so...
I've got
Gemma's
stacks of it here. This is terrifying.
My next choice is John Carpenter's Halloween from Michael Myers. Mm-hmm. Now, very this guy show. Is deadly and terrifying for the simple fact he's silent. Mm-hmm. We never ever get any dialogue from him. He is a man behind the mask. We don't really see his face.
That's even more scary.
And the silent killer, I mean, John Carpenter described him as a supernatural force, but a force of nature. And the fact that the force is just unkillable. He is literally, you can chuck anything at him, you can shoot him, you can throw a knife at him. Nothing ever takes this guy down. The very final scene of the film, again, another spoiler, but if you haven't seen it, stop the podcast now and go and watch it. He is lying there. We think he's fell from this window and died. The next shot, he's gone. Literally, there's nothing there. And you're left thinking, he hasn't, he's back. It was just a matter of time now until he's on space fighting someone else.
Isn't
it? Terrible. Ugh.
In America, you know, sort of around Halloween time, they often do like these horror houses or mazes. Yeah. They did one, I think it might have been last year, based on Halloween. And you had to go through the house and there would be flashes of Michael Myers just standing there. And it is terrifying. Go on YouTube, it's absolutely terrifying.
Bring a spare pair of pants with you.
Oh my God. Tommy Wiseau pants.
But obviously, that's all I wear.
But just, he is the ultimate for me. I love John Carpenter anyway, but in this film, he is terrifying. And I think his performance is brilliant. The way he moves is kind of like, it's just horrible. A horrible serial killer.
I think the gift and the curse is, you know, you say he's this unkillable beast and that's what makes him scary. But the fact that he's almost unkillable is what has led to 5,000 sequels. They should have just killed him.
And they recently announced they're bringing it back for another one. But John Carpenter's producing it, so I have a bit of faith.
Is Rob Zombie directing it again?
No. I really don't like them. And some people always praise remakes and some of the ones are, but this one's good. I really don't like it at all.
And
I like House of 1,000 Corpses, but that is shite. Gemma, your final choice.
Okay, so I thought I'd have a bit of fun on my third choice. Mm-hmm. And he is a serial killer when you think about it. So my choice is Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh my God.
I think that's kind of a harsh label to put on the man.
Well, but this is kind of, I wanted to choose this one because it is quite fun. And when you think about it, he is a cold-hearted serial killer.
Such a weird way to look at it.
But you can think of it like this. So obviously, towards the end of the film, they're trying to sort of batten off these bad guys. And Groot kind of extends his arm, pierces through about 5 or 6 different henchmen.
Yeah.
And then just like throws them left, right, up and down until they're dead and like motionless. And then he just turns to the rest of them, just gives this great big cheeky smile. The guy is a serial killer.
I like the justification. I like it.
And it makes a valid point, actually, how casually violence and murder is accepted in mainstream blockbuster movies. He has just most likely murdered a bunch of people, turned to his mates and smiled about it, and we're just merrily carrying on with what we think is a lovely, fun film that kids love. Yeah. And these people have just died.
And there's kids walking around with the T-shirt of him on and just loving life with it.
Yeah.
Good old Disney.
Who's gonna tell their next of kin? Got battered by a silver birch.
It reminds me of, was it in the first Austin Powers where you see a bit of the story from the perspective of the henchmen?
Yeah, it is.
And I love that because no one ever really thinks about what happens to those guys.
Yeah, so I thought, it's funny because I only watched it not too long ago as well. And it's such a violent scene when you think about it.
Yeah, because now you've said
he's
it.
He's so relentless and he doesn't stop. And even the other characters sort of look at each other like, what the hell?
And the smirk is really just like, all right, just kill five people.
Yeah, next.
I wouldn't be surprised if someone hasn't done like a YouTube video of that and replaced the audio with kind of like that sound from Psycho. Yeah. And then because when you see that smirk, then you'd be like, oh God, that's telling a different story.
Exactly.
Wow. I wouldn't have put money on that, I would be honest with you. But I like your justification, so you can
have
it.
My final pick, again, might be a slightly contentious one because it's actually two people, but I can't separate them. I've gone with Mickey and Mallory Knox from Natural Born Killers, played by Woody Harrelson and Juliette Lewis.
It's a great choice.
Yes, thank you.
I love this so much.
So why didn't you pick it?
They are absolutely amazing in this film. I love how gleeful they are. They're like, they're thrill killers. They're just doing it for the fun and because why not? You know, they don't hate the world. They don't hate people. They're not out for revenge. They're just doing it because they can. And that's kind of, that's arguably scarier than any other reason to be a serial killer. If you're doing it because you are, you know, killing people who've wronged you, you kind of at least understand where they're coming from. Yeah. But if you're a thrill killer just doing it for the sake, there's no rhyme or reason to it, which makes them scarier to me because you can't fathom them. You can't get in that mindset. And I think the characters are just played absolutely brilliantly by Harrelson and Lewis. Mm. Fantastic for both of them.
Oh, that film again.
I think it's a future rewatch, surely.
That's got to be a future rewatch.
Yes.
Hell, you know what? That is, I'm going to pick that soon.
And it's funny because the filmmakers involved disagreed heartily over it. Like, Tarantino wrote the script and then Oliver Stone directed it. And Tarantino, I think, hates the film. He hates the way Stone interpreted it into film. I think it's brilliant. I like all the little devices he uses. Like, there's a bit that's kind of like a sitcom with Juliette Lewis and her dad.
Perfection.
Yeah, there are bits in black and white. There are bits in colour. There's an animated bit, I think, when they're having the drug trip.
Yep.
It's a fantastically put together film.
And almost, there's some scenes in there where it actually shows you sort of the madness inside each of them as well, like these demons that are controlling them.
Yeah.
But again, there's no explanation as to why they did it. They just did it because they could.
They just did it because they could. Mm-hmm. And also, lest we forget, the film also has Robert Downey Jr. as Wayne Gale.
Yes!
I'm Wayne Gale reporting.
So good.
Inexplicably doing an Australian accent. I love it. I love him as Wayne Gale.
Because why not?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's got to be a rewatch real
big
soon.
Time. Big time.
Oh, man. I'm going to end this topic with my choice. I think it's, for me, the finest performance on screen for a serial killer. Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs. Mm-hmm. From the very first time we saw him over 25 years ago in Manhunter, I just think this guy is creepy as hell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For one film, he's behind bars pretty much the whole way through, but we still see into his mind and just how mental he is. But then when we actually see him in Hannibal as the actual killer and we get to see him actually the way he goes about killing people and the way he can make other people just lose their mind and chop off their own face and feed them to the deaths are the worst you can ever imagine. And it's disgusting. But it's Anthony Hopkins, who I still see as a really nice old chap. Mm-hmm. And he's always that. Whenever he's interviewed on stuff like Jonathan Ross and stuff, he's a lovely, really smiley, nice old man. But for some reason, when he goes into this mindset for this performance, nothing ever shit me up as much as this. It was that video that when I was a kid, my parents were not going to let me watch. It was Poltergeist and this. It was that one that you're not watching it. You can watch Aliens on your birthday, but you're not watching this. It's 18. We still did. Me and my mate Matt, we found the video from Blockbuster Video, Video Park, whatever it was called, and we watched it because I think his sister hired it for us. But I shit myself. I know. I literally
or figuratively.
Not E.T. style. I did genuinely. I thought it was.
Yeah.
I was probably about 8 or 9, and it was very scary.
The thing for me with Hopkins and his portrayal of Lecter, to me, it's two different characters. Silence of the Lambs is the really terrifying serial killer Lecter. The later films, Red Dragon and Hannibal, it's a much camper version of the character. He's playing it in a very different way, and I love it. Mm-hmm. I love those films. You know, Red Dragon, I think, is a great film, despite the fact it's directed by Brett Ratner, because that's a hell of a handicap to overcome. But that's a good film, and I love the way he plays Lecter in that, but it's more camp, more kitsch. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to me how he's modulated the character to fit different films, but it's great whichever way you look at it.
Yeah, and when I think I watched Silence of the Lambs probably about a month, 2 months ago as well, and the one thing I noticed about that performance altogether, you never see him blink.
Really?
You never see him blink.
Oh, I'm not going to have to watch it all again. Honestly. I'm staring at his eyes.
And but there's so much intensity, you know, when he's talking to Clarice as well. Obviously, he has this kinship with her, this weird kinship with her. But, I'm not going to repeat what you said, but it's the fact that there is just there's just nothing behind the eyes when you watch the first film that we were introduced to him in. But check it out. Yeah, never blinks once.
God.
Oh, man.
I don't like that.
Like a gecko. So, do you want to hear what social media said, guys?
I do.
Yeah,
that's quite natural now.
Mm. Oh, okay. So, on Facebook, we had Jo Wilson come up with her three. And we've got Summer of Sam, Mr. Brooks, as in Kevin Costner, Mr. Brooks.
I like that film. I like that film. He plays serial killer and then he has a hired help played by Dane Cook. It's the only good thing Dane Cook has ever done. Good
movie. That's true, actually.
Great shout.
And her third choice was We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Yeah. Oh, I watched that recently again and a lot of people slag that film off and say it's terrible. I think it was brilliant.
Yeah, and Tilda Swinton.
Yes.
Absolute fantastic in that as well.
Yeah, she was.
We had Michael Muir in there as well. He suggested Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees' mum.
Nice.
And Candyman.
Yeah.
Candyman.
He was dead scary.
Terrifying. And then on Twitter, we have TC Ristani at After Hours TC. Had to talk at work the other day. And hands down, it's Jason, Leatherface, and Michael Myers.
Nice.
All the classics.
All the classics. Lil' King Trashmouth that Alice minted. Had Kevin Spacey as John Doe in Seven.
Oh. Yeah.
Nearly made my top three. Mm-hmm. Nearly made my top
Groot,
three.
But Groot, you thought was more deserving.
Groot, hands down. She also chose Robert De Niro as Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
And Christian Bale as Patrick Bateman. And then the third one here, we've got Geki Thibben at Geki Prime. Michael Myers, Mickey Knox, and Dr. Carter Nix.
Oh, John Lithgow.
Mm.
Wow.
Not bad, eh?
Now there's a lot of pressure coming to you this...
There is.
At this very moment.
Okay, so it's my topic. So I did a lot of research before, obviously, joining the podcast as well. So I wanted to make sure anything that I was choosing wasn't going to clash with the ones that you've already chosen. Mm-hmm. And this one's never been mentioned. So next episode, we're going to get emotional, guys. I want your top three films that make you cry.
Oh, my God. Bring a tissue.
I always do.
So, next topic, top three films that make you cry. We've been to our local View Cinema to catch Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. So before we start this, we are going to do a spoiler alert. We are going to be talking about the plot, so if you haven't seen it, skip to the end.
Nice.
So Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. This is about brothers Dave and Mike Stangle, who have been asked by their parents to pick a suitable suitor for their sister's wedding. So they decide to put an advert on Craigslist, and it basically goes viral. And one thing about this film, it is actually based on a true story. Yeah. Did my research. This actually happened.
Yeah, crazy.
Mm-hmm. So,
like Tusk.
Moving on.
Never mind. That's really the premise of the story. Mm.
You've done well.
Thank you. It's, first time nerves and...
I'm embarrassed. Do you know why? Because this is your first go at it. And I listened back to last episode and I was dreadful. I tried to sum up that movie in about 8 words. I might just leave it to Ben. You've done well.
Thank you.
So what happens when they put an ad on Craigslist?
Okay, well, what happens is it goes viral. They are asked to go onto a talk show. Wendy Williams, who's very big in America, mm-hmm. so our American listeners, I'm sure, would know who she is. And they get these two girls that get in touch with them. And they're trying to sort of wangle a free holiday to Hawaii. They go to Hawaii and chaos ensues. So I'm going to throw it out to Mark first. What is your first thoughts of the film?
I really enjoyed it. It was very funny. Mm-hmm. And I laughed out loud a lot.
Super.
Which is... I haven't done that for a while. I'm not just going to watch serious films, but I don't... There's not that comedy that's been out for a long time that wasn't that supposed to be that good, but it just turned out to be funny. Mm-hmm. A lot of these comedies are forced on. You're like, go and see The Hangover 3. No, I don't want to. The first two are shit. You know, it's like, you know what I mean? It's to the point where it's like, there's not been a good comedy for a long time. This film hasn't been marketed very heavily. You know, there's a couple of buses with it on the side, but I didn't really hardly know anything about it. I loved all the cast and I laughed and enjoyed it for what it was.
Smashing stuff. How about you, Ben?
Yeah, pretty much the same. I thought it was a good bit of nonsense. It was light and fluffy. There's no real heft or weight to it, but it was great fun. Same as Mark, I laughed out loud many, many times. Some great lines, some great performances. Specifically, I want to single out Adam Devine as one of the brothers. He is one of the main actors from Workaholics, which is one of my favourite shows going. I think it's hilarious. And he's kind of a Marmite actor. Mm-hmm. He can. I know people who can't watch Workaholics and wouldn't watch this film because they find Adam Devine grating. I don't. Everything he does works for me, especially when he goes on one of these weird crying jags or when he starts screaming about things. That is never not funny to me. So I thought he was great. One of the girls that they end up taking to the wedding is Aubrey Plaza as well, who I thought was superb. It's probably the best thing I've seen her in. I like the fact that she was playing outside of the roles that she normally plays. She usually plays kind of ironic hipster types that are just sarky. But this time she's playing a loudmouth party girl, and it's different to what we've seen her do, and I thought she absolutely nailed it. Mm-hmm.
Trying to not duplicate what you guys have said, I really enjoyed this as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a perfect beer and pizza movie, in my opinion. But it's fun. Mm. It's not trying to change the wheel, but it's a good, fun film. And there was plenty of laughs as well. I think if you did see the trailer for it, there were one or two bits that did make it good. But initially in my head, I thought, that's probably the best bits. Mm. But man, I was wrong.
Yeah.
I was wrong. And perfect. I really, really enjoyed this film. And absolutely, I think the four main bits of casting as well had really great chemistry.
Yeah.
Lovely to see Stephen Root in a film like this as well, because I'm a big, big fan of Stephen Root. It worked for me. It did work for me.
I also want to give some love to, I know we said the four, but single out Zac Efron.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's gone from doing a lot of Disney and a lot of sort of teenage girl flicks that really are the, like, just put him out there for girls to, you know, really get excited over. but you know what I mean? He was just that heartthrob, wasn't he? And he's doing a lot of silly, like, Neighbours and Neighbours 2 and all. And I really enjoyed him in this. He has a lot of fun. His gags really worked. And like you said, his chemistry with Matey Boy from Modern Family, what's his real name?
Adam Devine.
Yes. It was great.
It was.
And at the very start of this film, I've seen some Workaholics. You got me into it, Ben, and I really enjoyed him in that. But I literally see him as a mini Jack Black, the way he talks, the way he's very full on.
And Mark, in the most recent season of Workaholics, they cast Jack Black to play his dad. Because he is very Jack Black-esque.
And he really is. And I can see why he is, Mama. I can get on it. And if anyone told me he's annoying, and I wouldn't argue, because I'm just on the opposite side. I find him funny. And I think for the film was an hour and a half.
Hour and a half.
I didn't get sick of him. His scene that you just singled out about him actually crying in the hotel was hilarious. And you know that that's improvised. You know that these two have just sat there and gone, on the script, character cries for a good minute, and he's just gone. I think during the credits you see him doing the actual takes.
That's right.
And it's hilarious.
Yes. Isn't he at the after credits scene? He's cry singing the national anthem for America as well.
And that's what, and Efron just breaks, isn't he? That breaks it.
I don't know how he managed to keep that straight face for so long.
I don't know.
So have we got any particular favourite scenes that we enjoyed?
I liked the stuff that took place at the rehearsal dinner. So that's when the two brothers are arguing backstage, and it's the old comedy trick that's been used a million times, the microphone being on and the people with it not knowing. You know, they did it in Naked Gun years ago. Mm. So they were arguing backstage. And one of the things that about that scene that made me laugh is in the build-up to that scene, I'd started thinking that this film had a very Wedding Crashers vibe.
Yes.
And then in that scene, they say it.
Because
Adam Devine's character decides that he's going to poison his cousin.
Cousin Terry.
In the exact same way they did it in Wedding Crashers. And he's saying it works in the film, it works in Wedding Crashers. So I thought that was kind of meta that they shouted that out. Usually meta things piss me off, but I actually found that quite amusing.
Yeah,
I liked a lot of the dark jokes about the sort of cancer and AIDS and stuff like this, which is really, which you don't think they're going to put out there. That's got sort of South Park territory. But some of the jokes they were saying, like, oh, cancer, he's got AIDS. And you're like, Jesus, he just, like, you got Zac Efron making jokes like that. And I thought, fair play to him for being brave enough to go out there and say that sort of stuff. But any scene with Audrey Plaza, I'm going to say it now, she would get a sack full. And I know that's...
Of letters, sorry.
Of fan mail from me.
That's right.
Because I am a huge, huge fan of her. And I remember, I think Adam picked back in the day as the best actress.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, every time I've seen her in a film, she's always the same character. Mm-hmm. She's basically the girl from Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
Life After Beth is exactly the same character. But Ben just picked up on it. He literally, this is the first time I've seen her be a bit like a sort of diva-ish kind of, like, look at me in a bikini and really brave. And I hope she kind of does a bit more like that and doesn't just go straight back to the, oh, well, we need an Audrey Plaza character. Let's get her back in to play that role.
Mm.
So She is unreal.
I'll tell you who I was really impressed with in this film as well. Sugar Lynn Beard, who plays the younger sister of the Stangles. I had never seen her in anything. I've never heard of this person before. She, I think, steals the film for me. I thought she is brilliant, and she gets a lot to work with. So there's a scene where she's getting kind of a massage with a happy ending, and she has to basically play orgasmic, and she knocks that out of the park. There's a scene where she's tripping her tits off on ecstasy, and she knocks that out of the park as well. There's the scene where she gets hit in the face with an ATV, the wheel of like that. What do we call them in this country?
Oh, like quad bikes.
Quad bike. She gets hit by the wheel of that and has to play her reaction to that. She had so much juicy material, and I thought she was brilliant.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to see a lot more of her. I was looking on her IMDb, and she's mainly a voice actress. She does, you know, voiceovers in cartoons and stuff. She is, however, going to be in The Masterpiece, the film about the making of The Room.
Oh.
So, yeah, I hope to see a lot more of her.
Yeah, she's also going to be a voice in the Seth Rogen animation Sausage Party.
Is that right?
She's going to play a baby carrot.
Nice. That's been getting pretty good reviews, actually. I want to see that.
It has. I think it's going to be good. But for me, it was the masseuse scene. It just completely knocked out the park. And one of the bits that I laughed out the hardest was her brother coming in just to see where she was. And the camera pans up to his face 5 times, so it sees him like sort of knocked back against the door and recoil as his sister is
jizzing.
I was going to say, I was going to say reaching the peaks of happiness, but jizzing, why not? Let's do it. But it worked. It all worked. I didn't expect this film to work. I know that there has been some pretty bad reviews for it. A lot of people have been marking it down, saying it's very childish, it's very puerile.
Yes,
but you know what? Childish and puerile works.
Exactly. My only real criticism with this film is I think that the direction is piss poor. It's directed by a guy called Jake Szymanski, who I don't think has directed a full-length movie before. He's done episodes of TV series, and he's known mainly as a music video director. Some of the directorial choices were abysmal, and I'll give you a couple of examples. The aforementioned scene where Sugar Lynn Beard's character gets hit by the wheel of the ATV.
Mm-hmm.
We then go to her hotel room, and the scene is shot from behind her. So everyone who's standing in front of her, all the rest of the cast, can see her damaged face. We're the only people who can't, because we're seeing her from behind. The camera then cuts to the front of her, and this is supposed to be the big shock moment when we finally see how bad this is that everyone else has been seeing. But when you cut around to the front, she's got her hand over it. So it robs the moment of the power. It's supposed to be cut from back to front, and then we see what everyone else saw. Bang, the joke lands. Because she had her hand over it, the joke didn't land. Piss poor direction. A second element of that is the scene that I talked about before at the rehearsal dinner. When the guys, they've got the mics on and everyone can hear them, but they don't realise, there are reaction shots from every character except Aubrey Plaza. She was there, she was in that scene, but they just didn't cut to her at any point. So it felt as if she wasn't there, and then she just turns up again at the end of it. It's like, why wasn't there a 1 second reaction shot from her when there was from every other major character? There were a few things that I watched that I noticed when I was watching. I thought, this is amateurish.
Mm.
Really poor directorial decisions.
I didn't think the ending worked. Mm. I think it could have just ended at the wedding scene, have maybe a tiny bit of a party, and then of course the fireworks go in here, there and everywhere, causing chaos and destruction. The musical piece at the end, I found a little bit cringy, I'm afraid. I know it was played to comic effect, but for me, I just thought, nah, let's just stop it here. So I felt that didn't work for me.
Yeah.
Is there any actors that are working at the moment that you can't see past a role they've played previously? So if they're, like, let's be honest, like Stifler, whatever film he's in. For me, Milton is always Milton. So I know he turned up in this film and we see him as a... how old is Office Space now? 20 years. I can't see past that he's Milton. So when he's talking normally, I expect him to go, give me TV. And I'm literally, I can't see it. I can't see past it. And it really ruins the film for me. I just expect, like, nah, Milton wouldn't have grown up and got married and have kids. It just wouldn't happen. So it ruined it for me. I'm sorry.
That's hard for you then, because Stephen Root is in everything.
Yeah.
He's in so much stuff, and he's always Milton, man.
Yeah. See, for me, I always think of King of the Hill. I always think of his Bolden character holding a beer and just being crap at life. but it's great to see Stephen Root again. And I think I read recently as well, he's possibly one of the most underrated actors because he's been in so many different films or TV shows as well. The guy's done numerous amounts of appearances.
Yeah. He's great. I love Stephen Root.
I do too. And one bit of Stephen Root, which I thought was the best bit, was when he's trying to close the patio doors to confront his sons.
Oh, yeah.
The best comedic way of trying to get... No. You've got to just jimmy it there that way. And he's still struggling. That was another really good point for me.
Yeah, it was a good bit of physical comedy because he was pulling the wrong door, isn't it? Yeah.
think that's all I've really got to say about
that. shall we wrap it up and rate it?
Yeah, there's not much. For comedy element and the fact that it surprised me, I thought, oh God, we've got to review this film. Mm. I'm going to give it a 6.
Yeah.
And I just want to say it now, I scored last week's Suicide Squad an 8, and I think that's too high. And if I could go back, I'd just seen it, so I came out a bit too excited.
Yeah.
I've had a bit of time to think about this. I definitely came out excited after this, but it's a 6.
I've been teetering on the brink between a 6 and a 7. I think I'll regret it if I give it a 7. So I'm going to give it a very high 6 as well.
It's a 6 for me. Mm-hmm. I think when I put it in the category of Central Intelligence good.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed Central Intelligence, but I also enjoyed this film. And I think they're on a very similar path. So for me, it is also a 6.
Overall, 6 out of 10.
It's competition time. If you'd listened to the last episode, which was Suicide Squad, we tied it in really nicely with a competition to win a Suicide Squad bundle. It was a really good bundle. It had a wig, t-shirts, playing cards, phone charger, the actual bat, not the actual bat from the film, but a nice replica that looked really... I think Kevin Smith's actually got
his daughter's got it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not anymore. We're giving it away. But we tied it in thanks to our good friends at Warner Brothers. And the question we put out there was, who played Harley Quinn in the film Suicide Squad? Gemma.
I believe it was Margot Robbie.
It was.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yes. We're going to give it away to Jonathan Bentley. Now, as you can see, I picked a guy on Facebook called Jonathan. So I hope to see you in that nice, you know, the tight t-shirt and the wig. And especially if you get that on Facebook, that would be awesome. To celebrate this week's episode, which is our big 52, a 2-year anniversary episode, I've got two prizes to give away.
So what you did there?
The first one is from our good friends, they're back, good old Universal, to celebrate the new Purge film, Election Year. They've given us a massive bundle again with a t-shirt, a rucksack, power bank, the works. And I'm going to give this away to one lucky winner who tells us who directed the Purge Election Year. That's all you got to do on Facebook, Twitter or Instagram. Another competition, new friends we've got now, Entertainment One. We're now in with E1. Cool. I've sorted it.
Cool.
David Brent, the Life on the Road film. It's just come out as you're listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
I've only gone and got us a bundle. This includes a t-shirt, some sunglasses, a stapler, guitar plectrums, and a little guitar amp.
Is the stapler in jelly?
It isn't, but we can arrange that. While we're in New York, you can sort that out. But it's going to have a nice little guitar amp, which is all good. And this is to celebrate the new film that's just come out. All I want you to do is let us know the name of the band that David Brent sings for in the film. Pretty simple.
Yep.
Let us know, and I'll announce the winners in 2 weeks' time.
As is our annual tradition, we like to revisit our top 5 movies of all time. Mark and I, last year, we announced our most recent 5. So what we're going to do is just announce if there's been any changes. Gemma, however, has never done an official top 5 with us. I think you gave us a top 3 on maybe your first appearance on the show?
I did, yes.
Okay, so we're going to get the full 5 from you. Before we get to you, though, Poochie, we're going to start with me and Mark. let's just get our differences out of the way. So, Mark, on our episode a year ago, your 5 were Jaws, Back to the Future, Almost Famous, Aliens, and The Thing. Any changes?
I'm sorry, there aren't any.
Really?
Wow.
No, that's fine.
It's simply down to the fact that I wanted to kind of change it just so I had something to talk about.
Mm.
Jaws is my favourite film ever made, I've decided. So that's quite in a year I've decided that has now overtaken The Thing, and Jaws is embedded in my heart as far as it could be as the greatest film ever made.
Excellent.
The Thing is still going to be my second. After I went to the Secret Cinema, Back to the Future, I just can't... I'm obsessed with that film.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Almost Famous has the best soundtrack, and I absolutely adore everything about it. And obviously, I recently got to meet the main guy himself, so it was even more important to me that I just knew it was the right decision. And Aliens is just Aliens. I don't need to say anything else, so I'm sorry. That's exactly the same.
No.
Don't be sorry. That's good choices.
No, that's good. Yeah, I'm happy for you there. I've made one change with mine. So my previous list was Blade Runner, Goodfellas, Pulp Fiction, Battle Royale, and The Empire Strikes Back. I now have to put Spirited Away into my list. I just love that film so much. We did it as a rewatch not so long ago, and getting to watch it and dissect it and talk about it in detail just increased my love for it. So it has to go into my five now because I think it's flawless. The question is, what do I remove? It's so hard, this. I'm kind of doing this on a whim, but I'm going to take out Goodfellas and put in Spirited Away. I might regret that in an hour's time, but that's what I'm going for. Spirited Away in, Goodfellas out. Go on then, Pooch, give us your five.
Okay, so when I came on the first time, I only had three. So my three was Spirited Away, The Shining, and This Is Spinal Tap.
Mm-hmm.
So my top five, Spirited Away and The Shining are still there.
Lovely.
It's very hard not to keep them in. But my other three choices, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which I think is a stellar film, and there's an amazing parody of it on a space episode as well. Shaun of the Dead, because obvs.
Yeah, that's all you need to say, really, yeah.
And my fifth choice is Boogie Nights.
Great
film. Nice.
It's a film, it's a very, very long film, but it's so complex, it works. Mm-hmm. Every single character that's in the film you care about as well. It's a film that I'm very happy to watch again and again, so it was incredibly hard not to include it in my top five. So that's my top five choice.
It's a great choice, and that's definitely going to be a future rewatch, because yeah. I love Paul Thomas Anderson films so much.
It's flawless.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mm. So there it is. That is our top fives as of August 2016.
We're now going to be going on our new feature from last episode, Let's Movie Masturbate. So on the last episode, we had a cauldron full of movie star names. I picked out the last one, and I gloriously picked Bruce Willis.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be masturbating over Bruce Willis, chaps.
I've always liked his round head.
Yeah, why not? So how the game works. So we need to pick out our personal favourite performance of Bruce Willis for this round as well. So Ben, we're going to start with you.
I have gone with a pick that you would never guess in a million years.
I cannot wait for
this. My personal favourite Bruce Willis performance is from the 2006 thriller 16 Blocks.
Ooh.
Did not see that coming.
Not at all.
Have either of you seen the film?
Nope.
No.
I'm not going to claim that it's a great film. It's not. It's a very good film. It's a solid film directed by Richard Donner, who is more known for things like Superman, The Goonies, Lethal Weapon films, etc. The plot of it is Bruce Willis plays a cop, and he has to escort a criminal from the lockup to the courthouse, which are 16 blocks apart in New York. That's all he's got to do, take him from A to B. But the criminal who's escorting, played by Mos Def, is going to be giving evidence against other cops to expose corruption in the force. So all these other cops are then trying to kill Mos Def on this 16-block journey, and it's about how Bruce Willis's character tries to keep him alive. And it is absolutely my favourite performance of Bruce Willis's, because in latter years, I think it's fair to say that Bruce Willis has pretty much phoned in most of his performances. He seems so entirely disinterested from what he does these days. And that works to his favour in this film, because in this film he plays a cop who is old and injured, he's got a limp, he's not far off from retirement, he's an alcoholic, he turns up at work hungover or drunk. You know, he's a dishevelled man who is completely exhausted mentally. And that kind of fits Bruce Willis. This character almost feels like he sees police work the way Bruce Willis sees movie making, that he just doesn't give a shit. So because he then plays this character as, you know, injured and old and hungover, it really works, especially because the film then takes place in real time. So this 16-block journey, he has something like 120 minutes to get Mos Def to the courthouse, or else the grand jury leaves and then it, you know, the testimony's no good. So he then has to do this. And it all takes place in real time with a very hungover... He looks awful. Like, he's pasty pale. He's got flop sweat. He has these massive bags under his eyes. And the best part about it is, initially, he only really tries to protect Mos Def as a survival mechanism. He's just doing it just to because that's his instinct. It's only later on when he starts to care about Mos Def and really wants to protect him. It's not just a survival mechanism. He actually starts to give a shit. And when that happens, you see a bit of a spark of life come into the character and also into Bruce Willis. And by the end of the film, he's got that John McClane vibe. It's the old Bruce Willis. The old spark is back. And it's just a great transition from the beaten down, hungover alcoholic cop to the kind of hero by the end of the piece. It's great work from him, and I would say please go out and watch this film. Again, not going to claim it's one of the best films of all time. It's a good, solid thriller, and Willis is phenomenal in it.
I'm convinced.
I'm done. I'm going to literally go and watch it tonight.
I'm almost ashamed of my choice now.
I'm just trying to work out into words how I can justify my... Can Ben go last from now on in this
Sorry.
Bit? So my choice is... It's not Cop Out, which I think you'll all be surprised by on that. It's Death Becomes Her.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I've gone for this is how refreshing it was to see him in this film. And I think it's a film that gets funnier and funnier after each viewing, which not a lot of movies can really achieve.
Mm.
Now, in this film, I was so used to him being the serious, diehard... One of my favourite TV shows back in the day was Moonlighting, and I used to watch it all the time in bed just to cheer myself up. Not that I was going through depression or anything. It was just I was in a job I didn't enjoy, and I'd sit and watch Moonlighting, because you just can't not like Moonlighting. It's like Roseanne. Those sort of easy in the back... Roseanne? But yeah, you know, they're good TV that you can just put on and enjoy. Good old Roseanne with Darlene. What a great show that wasn't. But anyway... This film is hilarious, and he is so quirky and so funny, and just such a comedic performance from such a serious actor. That at that point, he was doing Last Boy Scout and all these sort of films that were all serious. And it was just so good to see. And I watched it again recently, and Meryl Streep is fantastic in it. Is it Goldie Hawn?
It is Goldie Hawn, yeah.
Brilliant. But the directing, the story, and you can't not like him for the whole of the film. And I just thought... I can't pick Die Hard. This is for me more personal, and this whole feature's about. It's Death Becomes Her.
I think it's a damn good choice. I love him in that as well. I think that's a great film. It's a film I've not watched in a good long time, well over a decade, I'd say. Mm. But I used to love that.
It's Death Becomes Her for me as well.
Yeah. Wow!
Wow!
It is my choice.
I loved this when I was a kid. I really did. Yeah. And the special effects were mind-blowing, and I'd never seen anything like it. However, I had never seen Bruce Willis look so dowdy and so un-action man-esque in my life. I love the fact that he took a risk with this film, because he's not known for comedic roles.
No.
He is known for being the guy with a purpose to save as many people as he can whilst giving one-liners.
Yeah.
He is so just browbeaten. And he's so easily manipulated by women around him. He's seduced by beauty and fortune and just selfish for his own reasons. But I love the fact that he is just so damn weird in this film. And he's never done a role like this ever in his film career. Not before, not after. Yeah, I'm with Mark. It had to be Death Becomes Her.
Do you know what? I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Do you know why? Your opening line was that he took a risk.
Mm.
And that was the big thing. I bet when he got the script and he started acting and stuff, fair play to him, he gave it everything. He doesn't give anything to his most recent film. The last Die Hard, he literally, I don't think he knew where he was on set. He was just, where's the cash? Where is the check? Dreadful. But the fact that he gave it everything, like you said, he took a risk and it paid off.
It really did.
And it's true. He does so few comedic roles. The only kind of roles he does that are comedic are those kind of one-liner type roles. Action films where he gets to smirk and say a one-liner.
Yeah.
But out-and-out comedies, he does so few.
I wish he kind of stuck with it during the 90s, because I think he could have really made a different kind of film career. Of course, we know and love him as this action man, but I think if Jason Statham at the moment, he took a risk with Spy and it worked for him, and I think he's got a genuine path of going that way. If Bruce Willis maybe did the same thing,
it's too late.
It is.
Done an orbit. He can't get out of that one.
He's fallen into the same trap as Nicolas Cage, just doing cash grab movies now.
He's also in the Broadway version of Misery as well.
Is he?
He's starring in that. I don't know if it's still running, but the reviews...
He's quit not good. After a few weeks.
No, it was like watching John McClane do Misery. But with...
Oh, I would pay good money to see that. Especially if he's got the gun strapped to his back.
Do you want to hear what the guy said on social media?
Yeah.
A lot of variety, and you can't argue with any of it. That's the thing.
Fantastic.
So the DVD Lowdown have said Armageddon, but performance-wise, Colour of Night, and I've not seen it.
No.
And I feel bad. I thought I was pretty on it. Barlett and Kermack, Pulp Fiction. I mean... He's not a massive, massive, massive part for me in that film.
I think that's why I discounted it, because he's... You know, he's part of an ensemble. He's not in it a lot.
Earth Girls R-E-Z.
Is that the one with Jim Carrey in it? Was he really in that?
Yeah, it's pronounced Earth Girls Are Easy, Mark. Use your brain. It's not going to be E-Z.
The Fifth Element.
Oh.
What a film.
Oh. Very good film. Brilliant performance.
Absolutely unbelievable. Tyler Herbale. Unbreakable.
That is a good film.
That was very close to being my pick. Mm. 16 Blocks just pipped it, but he is so good in that film. And why have we not had a sequel? M. Night Shyamalan keeps putting out shit. Do Unbreakable 2.
Patrick agrees, and he put that the moment of that film is the newspaper story to his son when he's talking to him. And you have to admit, that performance, like you just said.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And finally, David Warren with The Last Boy Scout.
Okay. Yep, good film as well. No one said Die Hard then.
No.
That's interesting, because I think if the question would have been what is Bruce Willis's best film, we probably would have said Die Hard. But it's the point of this whole feature is it's the best performance in your personal opinion.
Exactly. I think that's why this feature is so much fun to do as well.
Definitely.
I'm feeling like I want to masturbate again. I've enjoyed today, but I'm ready.
He's got his second wind.
Can I pick who we're going to masturbate over?
Go for it.
It's a lot of pressure, you know.
No,
it's
right?
been a good. You picked one of the best.
So Mark has picked out of the cauldron, as Gemma called it.
You couldn't honestly write a script for this. On next week's episode, we will be masturbating over Adam Sandler.
Oh, jeez.
We did it.
We did it. That looks like what you would buy from a store.
It should have been.
Look at all this floor space. So much aerobics in here.
So many activities.
Step class.
It's making my head spin how many activities we can do.
Play Army Man.
Yeah.
This is how we do it. Da, 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 da. Hey, I never asked you.
Yeah.
You like guacamole?
This is how we do it.
Our rewatch this episode is the Will Ferrell comedy Step Brothers, which I picked, frankly, because I bloody love it. Gemma, I know you're a fan of it as well, aren't you?
Kind of.
Yeah. Talk to me. Why do you love it?
Fucking Catalina wine mixer.
It's the fucking Catalina wine mixer.
Oh, it's so much fun. It's just it's fun. Fun. The fact that Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly work so well together, they just gel. They're like peanut butter and jelly. They're like Sonny and Cher. They just go together so, so well. They bounce off each other. They feed off each other's energy. And their chemistry is off the hook.
Yeah.
I defy anybody that doesn't like their chemistry.
Yeah.
It works so well, you know, from the time where Ferrell puts his nutsack on the drums to Boats and Hoes.
Boats and Hoes.
Boats and Hoes. It's a great load of fun. I bloody love this film. And I obviously, for those who did listen to the episode and have just got their hearing back, I was very happy that we got this as a rewatch. I love this.
Yeah, I think it's fairly obvious how much Gemma and I love it. I know, Mark, you're not a card-carrying member of the Will Ferrell fan club like I am. What are your thoughts on this film?
Wank.
Oh!
No, of course it's not. I would be dead inside if I didn't like this film. I'm not a massive fan, just for the fact that the way that you and Adam used to literally go on and on and on about Anchorman. And I think Anchorman is overrated. I do. I don't think it is as funny as people make out.
Who to you?
This film is a lot better than Anchorman, in my opinion. I only watched it once, and then when you mentioned it as a rewatch, I did actually put my hand up and do the wanker sign of, I don't want to do this. I have no massive passion to want to watch this again. It's my favourite performance by him, by a mile.
Yeah.
It really has made me chuckle again. I was sitting at home watching it. It was quite late. I put it on. I was like, here we go. And I sat there, and from the moment it started, watching them when they're just about to meet for the first time, my favourite bit of the whole film, and I don't know why, is when they first get on their bunk beds and they're talking about, this is how we do it, and the bed breaks. And for some reason, that was the funniest thing I'd seen in months. And I was literally, my ribs were hurting laughing. And I just thought, this is the finest moment that these both of them are having the best fun, and it just works. And we have seen some terrible films since with, what's the one that he does with Kevin Hart? And he's got
Get Hard, that's
and
shite.
Stuff like that. And the one he's done with Napoleon Dynamite is
Blades of Glory.
I like Blades of Glory.
Blades of Glory.
It was on TV last week. Yes, I watched it.
We're going to skate to one song and one song only.
It's okay, but this is the top level. This is him at his peak for me, and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially the scene with the bunk beds.
His face.
The thing about that for me is when they're asking for permission to turn their beds into bunk beds, and Will Ferrell keeps going on about, oh, the amount of activities we can do. Just think of all the activities. They're in their 40s. What activities?
So many activities.
When the bunk bed falls down, they go to the mum and dad like, look what you made us do.
It is so funny. And you mentioned it, Gemma, the chemistry between Riley and Ferrell. It is amazing.
It's those
two are born to work together, which is why, you know, they've done two movies together, because they were also best friends in Talladega Nights, which is another great comedy. I love seeing them together. And I just love seeing John C. Reilly do comedy.
Yeah.
Because he didn't start out as a comedic actor. He was a very serious actor. He's in almost all of Paul Thomas Anderson's films. He was nominated for an Oscar for his role in Chicago. And then kind of mid-career or late career, he just started appearing in comedies, and he's absolutely amazing in them. Mark, you will have seen bits of him in Tim and Eric, where he plays Dr. Steve Brule. Have you seen any of Tim and Eric?
Or? I've heard of it, but I've never actually watched it.
Go on to YouTube and find bits of Dr. Steve Brule, where John C. Reilly plays this usually drunk, idiotic doctor giving his advice on things, and it's so, so funny. And he's just a natural comedian. So I'm so glad that he's gravitated towards those kind of roles in recent years.
If you like that, him and Will Ferrell did some work on Funny or Die as well.
Yeah.
They were the Green Team as well, trying to save the world by doing little tips, and then it just ends in violence and murder and rape, and it just gets completely out of hand.
I'll have to check that out, yeah.
Please do.
And as well as those two, there's also Adam Scott in this film playing Derek, the younger brother.
The a cappella scene in the car.
Oh,
brilliant.
God.
He just praises the kids as soon as it gets to his wife. Terrible.
You're too flat.
Sorry.
And I love the fact that it's Adam Scott, because this character of Derek is so punchable.
He's a douche.
You want to kick his ass. Mm. He's just got one of those faces. But the thing is, Adam Scott in real life isn't like that. If you ever see him in Tweed, he's the loveliest guy on earth. If you see him in things like Parks and Recreation and Party Down, he's brilliant. He's just a lovable guy. Mm-hmm. But in this, he transforms into such a dick. You just want to see him get his comeuppance.
Yeah.
So the bit where is it Dale punches him and he falls out of the treehouse, you're like, yes, Dale, yes!
And his abs clearly aren't his either.
And they're oiled up underneath his shirt. Yeah.
It's quite scary that this is such a different role for him, but he does it so well because he's the most likable guy in the world and everything else. But I absolutely hated him.
Yeah.
Like, despised him.
Yeah, massive wanker.
And this was the first thing I ever saw him in. So the next thing I saw him in, I think, was Party Down, which I don't know if you've ever seen. It's an American sitcom where he played a caterer, and it's absolutely brilliant. And so it was hard at first to take him as a likable person. And then he's, of course, lovely in Parks and Recreation. Mm-hmm. But I had, you know, like you said with Milton, your thing with Stephen Root, I had that with him because all I knew him was the douchebag Derek. So it took a while to warm to him.
I will say it now. If I was a woman, and I might be one day,
hello,
but you never know.
Over here.
Yes. He would be the sort of person I'd want to marry. Okay. I'm going to say it because he's just a lovely... He is the word... If you looked up lovely in the dictionary, there'd be a picture of him. He is just lovely.
He is.
Would you marry him?
I would, yeah.
If you're listening? Yeah. She's up for it.
Where do I go from there? The pinnacle for me, the thing that makes Step Brothers so great is the Catalina wine mixer.
Yeah.
That whole scene with them throwing this incredible mixer and everything just starting to deliberately go wrong with the Billy Joel cover band.
Yeah, we do 80s Billy Joel songs only.
Play We Didn't Start the Fire! No, man. And then obviously we see this beautiful moment of the Step Brothers sort of joining forces and Will Ferrell's character doing this time to say goodbye with John C. Reilly on drums, just every now and again, just interjecting with boats and hoes.
Do you know what? I actually find that really moving. I think Will Ferrell has an above average voice, and his rendition of Porti Valare, I actually think he's really quite beautiful in parts.
It's actually too good. You just think this can't be right, but it works.
Especially with the crashing drum solo at the end to really finish it off.
The outro, that's how you end a song.
Perfect. Big
time. One of the things you mentioned earlier, Gemma, was the nutsack. So there's a part in the film, if you've not seen it, where Will Ferrell's character puts his nutsack onto John C. Reilly's character's drum kit. Yeah. And it's a very realistic-looking nutsack. It's not actually Will Ferrell's nutsack.
There was hairs.
It is a $25,000 prosthetic with real hair attached.
It's the most expensive balls I've ever heard.
Yeah, absolutely. 25
That's
grand.
Crazy.
25 grand for a plastic
nutsack. It's a hell of a responsibility to look after that as well. Like, if you if you put them, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? That isn't good. That's a lot. I bet one person in the credits is nutsack assistant or nutsack observer, because that is too much money.
Bollock technician.
I'm glad you picked this, Ben. I won't lie. I will retract my wanker sign from last episode. And it was so much fun. Gemma, I believe this is the first time you've enjoyed a rewatch.
It is.
That you've been given.
Oh, wait. Second, because I quite liked Observe and Report.
Oh, yes. Yes, yeah. That was a very good film.
But it's nice to get one that doesn't rhyme with Schmeddy, Schmott, Schmingered. You know, or Schmatz woman. So I'll take it.
I'm hoping that Will Ferrell and Adam McKay come back together and do more films, because they've got a great track record. So Adam McKay co-writes with Will Ferrell, and then he directs. They've done between them The Other Guys, Talladega Nights, Anchorman 2, and this one as well. And I love them together. I love their aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And now obviously Adam McKay's gone off and is doing big movies like The Big Short and winning Oscars and shit now.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping he'll still find time to make these batshit crazy comedies with Will Ferrell, because I love them.
We can hope, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I'm also hoping we get more Will Ferrell like this. He has had a bit of a bad run. I know you'll watch anything that he's in.
Yeah. Mm.
But I can't think of the last film in the last couple of years that I've gone, oh, I want to watch that. And there's a lot of stuff he's done. He's churning out quite a few. Probably Old School was one of my last favourites.
I think the last one of his that I genuinely really liked was The Other Guys, and that was probably about 2010, something like
that's
that.
That's what I mean. It's a long time. Mm.
Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
I don't have much more to say about it. I just love this film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard to talk about a comedy that you just sat there laughing constantly. Yeah. There's not a lot of analysis that can go into it. It's a great film, though.
Can I go first on this one?
Of course you can.
I'm going to do it, and this is crazy, but I'm going to stick to it, not like I did with Suicide Squad. It is an 8. I really did enjoy it. It's his best performance. That deserves a high score. I couldn't say all this greatness and then say it's a 5. I'm going to give it an 8.
Yeah, that's a good shout. I'm going to give it a 9. It is absolutely one of my favourite comedies. I would argue that it is as good as Anchorman. I wouldn't say it was better. I think the reason why I prefer Anchorman is because it's more quotable. Mm-hmm. There are just more one-liners.
And that's the reason I don't like it.
Yeah, exactly. He's sick of me and Adam saying all the quotes. But I think it's a phenomenal film. It's 9 out of 10 for me.
And for me, it's a very high, strong 8.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely hilarious. It's a film you can watch again and again and tell your friends about, and then they get into it, and they tell two friends, and they tell two friends.
And they tell their friends. Yeah.
So for me, an 8 out of 10.
So overall then, Step Brothers, 8 out of 10.
So guys, it's my turn to pick the rewatch. I've been thinking about this one for quite a while, and I can tell you now, I think I might be taking a risk. I don't know if you like it, because I've not talked about it with you. You might love it or hate it.
Shoot.
But it's a film that I've seen on IMDb that is literally hated 1 or 2 out of 10, hate it, worst film ever made, and other people say it's a 9 or a 10, it's one of the best films ever made, and I'm one of them.
Okay.
I'm not going to do a big build-up and blah, 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 blah. On the next episode, the rewatch is Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
The Robert Downey Jr. film.
The Robert Downey Jr.
Good
film.
Good choice.
Some Shane Black.
You've never seen it?
No.
Oh, how are we good then?
It's hilarious.
Hello.
And stick around for that.
Get fucked!
It's time for round 2 of our brand new quiz, Get Fact.
Yes!
This is the quiz where we each come up with 3 statements about a movie. One of the statements is true, the other 2 are complete bullshit. And then it's up to the other 2 members of the podcast to guess which one is in fact true. We're going to be picking 3 films each, so 3 sets of statements. After last episode's round, the scores are as follows. I am in the lead with 3 points. Just behind me is Gemma with 2, and then following up in the rear is Mark.
Hang on, this sounds like Human Centipede.
You're in the middle.
That's the worst
spot.
So Mark's got 1 point. What we're going to do is we're not going to have a winner individual weeks. We're going to have an overall winner at the end of 3 episodes. So we're just going to tally up the scores. Gemma, I'm going to let you take first shot. So
cool. What
is your first set of statements?
My first set of statements is from the 1995 film Clueless.
Ah.
Right. So fact number 1. Coolio was set to appear in the film at a party scene, but pulled out when his mate LV, of Gangster's Paradise fame, wasn't allowed to join him on screen. So instead, they got the Mighty Mighty Boss Stones instead.
Similar artists.
Number 2. Paul Rudd originally played Josh in a very heavy New York accent, thinking it would make him and Cher a relatable couple. Number 3. Brittany Murphy's character name Ty means feces in Indonesian.
Wow. Jesus.
Get your head around that. So,
my prediction is that Coolio is true.
Number 1? Okay, Ben.
Trulio.
I agree. I'm going number 1.
It's a lie.
Oh,
yep. The correct fact was number three. Brittany Murphy's character name Thai means feces in Indonesian.
I need to get scratched up on my Indonesian.
I know, right?
Go on then, Mark.
I've picked Jaws. I believe this is one of your favourite films, isn't it?
Indeed.
Even though you didn't mention it earlier.
It's well, it's a tough crowd.
Here's my facts. Or are they?
One of them's got to be.
Are you ready?
Ready.
When it was initially released in the summer of 1975, over 97 million people went to see this, making it the first ever summer blockbuster. Steven Spielberg named the shark Bruce after his lawyer. The writer, Peter, is it Benchley? He originally wanted to choose Robert Redford, Paul Newman, Steve McQueen, or Tommy Wiseau to play in the film. So what are we thinking?
I'm thinking that number one sounds like it could be true, but I know how you operate, and I think you've changed the numbers. You've said 97 million. It was probably 96.8 million. So I'm going to say number two is correct.
I am also going to say number two.
Ben knows me far too well. It was 67 million, not 97. And yes, it was named Bruce.
Correct.
So you didn't think Tommy Wiseau would have been good in it?
He would have been
the shark.
I do think he did very good.
I would have made him 38. So,
but what about this as a line? Oh, hi, shark.
I did not bite her. It's not true. It's bullshit.
Wow. So I've just thrown away some points straight away.
Okay. My first one, my first set of statements come from 1990 comedy, and I'm doing speech marks, comedy Men at Work.
Brilliant.
Oh, I'll know this.
Number one. A garbage collectors union demanded that the film be banned for portraying garbage men in a negative light. Two, director Emilio Estefez originally wanted to cast a young Mike Myers in the lead role, but Myers couldn't get the time off from Saturday Night Live, leading Estevez to cast his brother Charlie Sheen instead. Statement number three, the French title of the film translates as total garbage.
Oh, man.
I'm going to go number three.
I'm going to go number one.
So Gemma's gone with total garbage. Yep. Mark has correctly gone with number one.
Oh, no.
It was apparently some. I think it was a Japanese union of garbage men wanted the film banned.
I was on a plane ready to. I'd seen the film as a kid. I was like, I agree. This isn't the portrayal it should be. I'm not happy. Get on board. So as if I'm going to get that wrong.
That's
you know
true.
What I mean?
Should have followed.
I'm really, really pleased with myself that I kept a straight face when I said it was total garbage.
You convinced me. I was like, definitely that one. So my next one is the 2002 horror classic, 28 Days Later.
Oh, beautiful.
So, number one. The extras who played the infected were classically trained ballet dancers. This was because their bodies could contort like the infected needed to be. Number two. Horror novelist Stephen King bought out an entire showing of the film in New York City. Number three. Cillian Murphy insisted on a full frontal nude scene to rake more people to see the film.
I'm going to go number two. Stephen King brought loads of people to
see
it.
Number two? Okay, Ben?
I'm going to go number one, the ballet dancers.
Point to Mark.
Yes!
Well done.
I know he's an absolute obsessed with that film into a big way.
I wonder if he just rented out that whole screen just for him and him alone, or if he bought some buddies.
It's probably him and Joe Hill.
Never know. My next choice is The Thing. So, Nick Nolte turned down the role of MacReady, as did Jeff Bridges. This is one of the very few Universal films that does not begin with the actual Universal logo, the same as The Blues Brothers and also Jaws. The helicopter featured in the opening scene is a Bell 208.
I'm going to go with number two.
I'm going to go with number one.
Gemma's right.
Yeah, whoopah.
My next set of statements belong to 1993 Stallone action flick Demolition Man.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Statement one. A sequel was planned but then scrapped when the producers were threatened with a lawsuit by the producers of Time Cop over alleged plot similarities. Statement two. Comedian Dennis Leary, who co-starred in the movie, is on record as calling it a giant piece of shit. Statement number three, Sandra Bullock and Wesley Snipes didn't actually meet during filming, with their shared scenes being filmed separately and composited together in post-production.
I've got to say number two.
So you're going with Dennis Leary saying it's a piece of shit.
Ironically, number two as well.
Number one.
So you're going with the Time Cop.
Yeah.
Gemma is correct. Dennis Leary called it a giant piece of shit, and he's wrong, because that film that film is badass.
It's a masterpiece.
I wouldn't go that far.
So my third and final one. We're going back to 2008 in Bruges.
Ooh. Oh, great film. Mm.
In order to create the feeling of Christmas, Christmas decorations were kept in some streets of Bruges until the end of March. This resulted in the town council making an official communication to the people of Bruges explaining the reason why. Number two. In the original copy of the script, Ray was imagined as a female character. Due to Colin Farrell's successful audition, they decided to change the role to a man. And the third one. You can actually book a Segway tour of In Bruges, In Bruges, which takes about 45 minutes.
Oh, man.
I'm going to go three. I'm going to go for the Segway tour.
Yeah, Mark.
Number two.
You're both wrong! Christ. Yes!
Gemma's happy.
I'm the queen of bullshit. I've just realised.
Here's a poker face. My final one is the classic Uncle Buck. It is a classic. Buck's car, which is known as The Feast, was a 1975 Mercury Coupe. Gabby Hoffman, who plays Amy's daughter, also was in Field of Dreams, released only a year after Uncle Buck. Danny DeVito was considered for the role of Uncle Buck.
I'm going to go number two.
Yes, two as well.
Nope. Danny DeVito was actually going to be Uncle Buck.
Wow.
Perhaps he wasn't tall enough. You know what I mean?
He is about 4'8", though, isn't he? Bless him.
Can we have like a little roundup of the scores just before you give yours? I want to see if I can win.
No. You can find out at the end, like everyone else. And the final one for me then is from 1995 action threequel, Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Oh.
Statement one. The film coincidentally predicts a future presidential race between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Two. Screenwriter Jonathan Hensley was questioned by the FBI after the film's release, as they wanted to know how he knew so much about bank vaults. Three. Stars Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson are co-owners of a New York bar called McLean's.
Oh, God. Any one of those three can be true. I've got to remember back to watching it now.
I'm going to go number two.
You're going with the bank vaults.
Yeah.
I'm going to say number one.
You're going with the Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump. Mark is correct.
Yes.
They actually, the FBI actually, because the whole scene revolves around breaking into a vault and the FBI questioned him, like, how did you know all this? And he said, I found it all on the internet.
Like we all do.
So, at the end of today's round, I scored 1 point, Gemma scored three, and Mark scored three. So overall, it means I've got four, Mark's got four, but Gemma has five.
Hooray!
So Gemma, queen of bullshit, is out in the lead as it stands. Tune in next week for round three of Get Fact.
I'm trying to say this with energy, I really am, but it's shark. God, it's shit. No, it's Sharknado 4, the Fourth Awakens time. Now, as an ongoing tradition now, which is, we shouldn't have started this really. I don't know what we did. We signed ourselves up.
We can end it now, that this can be the last
No, you know there's going to be the fifth, what would it be? The
fifth one.
Revenge of the Fifth.
Revenge of the Fifth. You know that's going to happen. Sci-fi, if you're listening, we're going to sue you. This is the fourth film. We've done all three now over the space of 2 years. I'm not even going to talk about what happens in it. It's a fucking Sharknado, yeah? Do you know what I mean? Tara Reid is back for more. We were left on a real big cliffhanger if she was going to survive or not. You know, that was a big one. You know, forget Lost and Breaking Bad and all those sort of things. This is the one that's kept me up at night, never knowing if Amy was still all right or not. You know, Jesus. Even though there was hashtags, wasn't there? Save Amy or let Amy die of fucking bad career moves and stuff. But I don't know. This is the fourth film anyway. They've ripped off the Star Wars thing and we are going to try and review it. I don't want to spend too much time on it. Ben, tell me what you honestly thought of Sharknado 4.
pardon my French, but it was fucking shit.
Yep.
It was atrocious. I can kind of enjoy the earlier ones. You know, they're daft and they're silly, but they're knowingly daft and silly. Whereas now it's kind of, it's just shit now. It was sort of winking at being shit before, but now it's just simply shit. And this one seemed to have an even lower budget than the previous one. It was Birdemic level bad.
Yeah.
Some of the CGI and the sharks flying around, it looked really, really ropey. And they're going over the top with the cameos now as well. In the earlier ones, there'd be hundreds of cameos, but I knew who all the people were. Now, there are people who are clearly somewhat famous because the camera lingers on them and they have one line, but I've no idea who they are. They're clearly meant to be someone I know, but I don't know who they are.
Like a bad Big Brother lineup.
Yeah, exactly. Celebrity Big Brother. It was unwatchable shit, which sadly I did watch. It's an atrocity. And it really pains me that they are clearly going to do a fifth because the fourth one ends on a bit of a cliffhanger. They're going to bring it back, but they need to put it to pasture because, pardon me for doing a Mark level pun, but it has finally jumped the shark. they need to end it.
Yeah.
End it now. It is awful.
Mm-hmm. Fartnado, more like.
Nice.
Wow. Hang on,
you just looked down. Can I just ask?
Yeah.
This isn't on YouTube, obviously, or live stream. Have you actually got notes?
I've actually got notes. This is my commitment to the Skip to the End podcast. And in case I've forgotten anything, because believe me, I wanted to, I thought I would do a last will and testament of the film. I've actually never watched any of the Sharknado films before coming onto the podcast.
Lucky girl.
So I decided to watch all four back to back.
What?
Now, this is only akin to Chinese water torture. It is... Where do I start, really? I think my highlight of the film was when a Chippendale thrusted a shark to death. That was quite
yeah.
fun.
Yeah, that was cool.
Mark, your thoughts? Wow, it's terrible. Yeah, I mean, the first one's probably the best one.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
It was original, off the wall. It wasn't taking itself too seriously. Mm. The level of cameos almost suggests that it knows it's a joke now.
Yeah.
And it no longer becomes funny. It just becomes painful to watch.
That's the point. The fact that it knows it's a joke is all yeah. well and good, but it should know to then end the joke.
Absolutely.
All jokes must end at some yeah. point.
And not only that as well, I also notice you say about, you know, we don't want to get the lawyers in if they decide to use our
yeah.
recommended title. How many film lines did they steal?
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
not
yeah.
only that as well. I mean, the whole thing about the... there was a lot of references to Wizard of Oz, obviously in Kansas, and then there was a house falling on Stacey Dash's body, which
good.
That was very, very good, actually. Yeah, a lot of lawsuits waiting.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Star Wars thing, obviously they had to force Star Wars elements into it because of the title mm-hmm. they'd given it, but the amount of quotes like stay on target and don't get cocky, it was pissing me off. It really, really grated yeah. on me by the end of it.
Come with me if you want to live.
Oh. The opening scene with the crawl, and then it did the planet, and then there's a shark jumping by, yeah. and then... The end, when we're seeing one shark that's getting caught up in the with the cows and stuff, and one eats the other, then another one eats another, oh, yeah. and it keeps getting bigger and just keep eating yeah. it. Because not even two or three, it's just like eight. Then a whale comes
yeah.
in and
Jeez.
Joins in, and I'm like...
Even like when they were saving everybody that we thought had gone, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It was like a really fleshy pass the parcel game.
It was ridiculous.
Do you know what I'd never noticed until this fourth one? That Tara Reid cannot pronounce the word chainsaw. She says chainsaw. So you know she's got a chainsaw hand attachment, like a robotic hand.
Unfortunately.
She says, chainsaw on, chainsaw off. It's chainsaw, not chainsaw. What's wrong with the woman?
She's probably done a few lines of coke on set. And she's like, whatever.
The views of Mark are not the views of the Skip to the End podcast.
No, she wouldn't have done that. That was a joke. No malice meant in that or anything.
Thinking about some of the cameos then. So you mentioned, I think before the recording, that Jedward are in it.
Jedward are
why
in
the
it.
Why are Jedward in this?
They were in
why are they in anything?
They were also in a Blink and You'll Miss It third one as well. Oh hell no.
Good lord.
It's terrible.
Corey Taylor, lead singer of Slipknot, plays a security guard. Why, Corey? What are you doing, mate?
Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Yeah, dog's in there. Seth Rollins, wrestler's in there.
Luckily he was in it for 10 yeah. seconds.
It annoyed me though, because there's a bit where they try to put a wrestling reference in. He says that he's going to super kick that shark back to the Dark Ages. Seth doesn't do the super kick. It's not one of his moves.
No,
so.
He should have said, I'll pedigree yeah.
Or get Dolph Ziggler in to do it, and then it would have been a correct line.
And Dolph would have been up for it, I'm sure.
Yeah, big time.
This is a film now that has oversold it. We've said this. It's now to the point where you said Birdemic.
Mm.
Joking aside, Birdemic was made for about a tenner.
Yeah.
This was made for probably a couple of million. I wouldn't be surprised if they throw that sort of money at this.
Yeah.
It does look as bad as Birdemic, if not worse now. And the bit where towards the end Tara jumps in the water to, I think she's doing something, I can't remember what she's doing. She's in a lake, like getting swam off or something.
Oh my God, yes.
It was like a cardboard cutout of her moving up and down, like sort of South Park. And I'm like, I know it's funny because it's so low budget, you're supposed to laugh at it, but it's just annoying now.
Yeah. No splash marks either.
I've got to the point now where all I want is it to finish.
Oh,
Jesus Christ. I bet I can tell you what your favourite cameo was, Mark.
Go.
Evil Car herself. Christine, wasn't it? Why?
Because they listened to our episode and were like, yeah, we need to bring this back. Mate, there's no point to this. There's no actual story anymore. They just go off and do what they want. Don't make any more. Don't.
No, it's absolutely bullshit. And especially because they keep trying to up the ante. So there was Sharknados and then Sharkacanes. Oh, yeah. And now it's Lightningnados.
Oil Nado.
And then it finished off with the Nuclear Nado. Oh. It's like, oh, for fuck. Just stop it.
And
just
how
stop
bad
it.
Did the Nuclear Nado look?
Yeah. Awful.
They just put yellow on the coral paint or whatever it was.
Coral paint.
It was so bad.
I'd rather there be a no Nado.
Yes.
Personally.
I want to score this very low, but I'm going to give it credit for the Hoff. I like the fact that if it wasn't for this film, the Hoff and what's her name again? The one who's got a face like my elbow?
Tara Reid.
Them two together would not be working if it wasn't for these films.
Very true.
And that's what you got to think. And Matey Boy, the main guy.
Yeah.
I've never seen him in anything else. He ain't going to be in like Dunkirk coming with Christopher Nolan featuring.
I don't know, the little div from One Direction's in it, so you never know.
God.
We've got to think of their careers. We've got to make sure that every...
This is funding their habits.
Yeah.
of acting. But it's true. And do you know what? I said to myself before this feature came, I didn't want to get to 10 minutes. Right now, we're on... about 8.
Right, let's score it. Before we score it, Mark, what I want to do is just read out to you what scores we've given to the previous ones.
Oh.
So, Sharknado 3, Oh Hell No, you scored that a 6. I inexplicably scored it a 5. And then we did Sharknado 2 on our very first episode, which I inexplicably scored a 5, and you only gave a 3. So you think the series has gotten better as it's gone along,
yeah,
by the sounds of it.
So. You wait for this. I'm going to go with a 2. Okay. Just because if it wasn't for this, I don't know. There's some people out there that like it. There is. And it isn't that bad. It's shit, but it knows it's shit. At least it knows it's shit. Birdemic didn't know it was shit. Birdemic. But yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna give it a 3. Certainly not the best one of the series, but that's like saying, you know, would you rather have a lump here or there.
Oh my God. So, brutal. She means a bruise.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yes. So for me, it's a 3.
I'm going to give it 1. It was unwatchable shite. I'm giving it 1 purely because I like Seth Rollins. So overall, Sharknado 4, The Fourth Awakens gets 2 out of 10.
It wouldn't be skipped to the end without the listener questions. I think they're a crucial part to what we are. So we're going to start things off with, and this is going to be interesting because there's some actually coming just for you.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Blame Thrower has said, what is your favourite ever David Brent quote? And he can have it because the film's out.
Oh, God, that's tough. I think probably my favourite one, and it's not necessarily a hilariously funny line, but in the context, it works brilliantly. I think it's in the Christmas special when Brent keeps coming back to Wernham Hog, even though he's not supposed to. And he comes in with his dog and he's having an argument with Neil. And Neil says that he can't come in with the dog. And he says, oh, taking it out on animals. There's your evidence. I love that line. There's your evidence.
It's a short and sweet one for me, but it just epitomises Brent when he's... it is in the Christmas specials as well, when we see him as a travelling salesman. By the way, who does your tampons? Perfect Brent.
Mine is, if you want the rainbow, you've got to put up with the rain. Do you know what philosopher said that? Dolly Parton. And people say she's just a pair of tits. I just love the way he said it. And most of the stuff he says is hilarious.
Oh,
but...
God, we quote office stuff nonstop.
Jessica Lauren, if you could have one actor's career, who would it be?
Tilda Swinton.
Just because. Very nice.
Tilda Swinton is one of those actresses that she never repeats herself. You know, she can go from being this crazy train driver leader in Snowpiercer to a harrowing shell of a woman, and we need to talk about Kevin. She is so diverse. Yeah. So diverse.
Snowpiercer.
Snowpiercer is so good. My pick would be Leonardo DiCaprio, because I think the way that he transitioned from kind of poster boy pinup for teenage girls to being the world's greatest actor is just superb. And the fact that he can do anything. He can do anything. He can turn his hand to anything, and he can choose to do whatever he wants to do. Leonardo DiCaprio doesn't have to audition for things, you know. Mm-hmm. He picks what roles he wants to do. He has the perfect career, really.
Mine would be Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Just for the fact I could say I've been in The Thing, and also I don't think he's got many bad films on his CV.
No.
And I think, you know, Escape from... Think of the characters.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
True. Snake Plissken.
Big Very Trouble true. In Little China, all of them. Amazing. Wayne Saunders. Ben has often talked about pop culture black spots. That takes us back to when we used to do homework. Gemma,
yes.
I'm interested in what are yours? She gets her own questions.
I love this.
Episode 2, full time. I'm not happy.
Well, I suppose because of the significance of the fact that it is supposed to be a really good film, I've never really seen, like, Das Boot.
Mm.
Now, I know it does. It's heralded as one of the finest sort of foreign films around, and it obviously has a very significant part in the performances and the fact that it's on such a claustrophobic environment as well. I've never really gotten around to seeing it at all. I understand that it is very high on a lot of film critiques lists and
it's
things.
It's not a bad thing.
But I've just never got around to...
You're not alone, I've never seen it.
No? No. Oh, that's okay.
Nor have I.
There we go.
So it's a shared pop culture black spot.
23 and a half film, we've said. I think me and Ben have touched upon this slightly before, but it'd be interesting for the new listeners. What is your earliest ever memory of cinema? And mine isn't Men at Work. We joke about the fact that my parents took me to see it, but I'm very grateful, actually. My parents in 1989, so I was probably 6, took me to see Back to the Future 2. And I remember literally, this is actually quite sad. When we used to go to the cinema back in Shrewsbury where I lived, it was one cinema, which was like an independent cinema. And on a Saturday, if you went, we'd have to leave an hour early so we could definitely get tickets.
Really?
The queue would be all the way down the road. And it was part of the fun. Like, you're queuing, like, I hope we get in. You'd get your popcorn, you'd sit down, and it'd be like, I'm sorry we sold out, but come back at the 6 o'clock showing. Mm. And just imagine that now, going to, you know, The View or somewhere, not being able to get tickets. And then it was, oh, I miss those sort of days. But yeah, Back to the Future too.
I don't know if this was necessarily my earliest memory, but it's one I've talked about before on the podcast multiple times, was when my cousin shit himself when we were watching Willow, because he was enjoying the film so much he didn't want to get up and go to the toilet, so he just pinched a loaf in his pants.
Pinched a loaf? Yeah.
How am I going to top that? It was actually the very first time I went to the cinema, and it's actually my very first vlog on my page, popcornheart.co.uk.
Oh, look at that. Plug in.
Or go to skiptheend.co.uk and there's a link there that takes you to it.
Right?
Double hits, yeah.
My very first memory was I went to see Bambi with my mum and dad. And the one thing I remember about it before going to watch it was this beautiful poster on the outside of the cinema. Because I used to live in Germany and we only had one cinema, one screen. So the artwork was at the very outside of the cinema. So I went in, watched the film, was enchanted by it, as you would be as a child. As we came out, the poster had been changed into Rambo.
Mm.
I was absolutely devastated that that poster was no longer there, and as of such, cried like a baby. So that is my first memory of going to the cinema.
Was the film in German? Because I can't help but think that Bambi would be a very different affair in those harsh German tones.
No,
Bambi!
It was in English. My mum and dad were in the forces, so it was an English cinema.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, I mean, you would have thought I'd be in tears after, obviously... Bambi's mum was made into meat pie, but unfortunately not. It was, oh, sorry. But no, it was Stallone's rippling biceps that caused my eyes to tear up.
I would like to see them two combined, Rambo and Bambi.
Rambi Bambi.
Sandra Smith, a new listener, so thank you. What do you believe is the best villain laugh ever? I mean, everyone normally picks the Joker. And for me, I know he spent ages and ages in hotels. Heath Ledger's is good. Mm-hmm. I just think it's creepy. It's sinister. It's not so comical like the most recent take on it and even the older days. I think that that laugh for me just literally does cut through. But, ooh, it's weird.
I'd have to agree with you. That'd be mine as well.
For me, because I watched it as a kid, I would say Ursula from The Little Mermaid. Oh, yeah. Still haunts my dreams.
John Brooks, I've just watched As Good As It Gets, and it's made me think, do any of you guys have obsessive compulsive disorders in any way?
Yes,
yeah,
I do.
Big time.
Here's a counselling session right now.
If I'm going to buy a package of something, so be it a Blu-ray or a CD or just like something in a box, it has to be pristine. Mm-hmm. If it's got a dent, a rip or anything, I will go to the next thing and see if there's something as well packaged. I'm paying for that as well as the goods inside. So yeah, it's weird, I know.
It is weird. I have a very odd thing about right angles. Things have to be placed at right angles. So anyone who works with me, people who sit next to me at work, they know that you can't move any of my stuff. My keyboard is perfectly at right angles to the corner of the table. My stapler is positioned in such a way. If you move it, if you borrow my stapler, I will know because you won't have put it back right. No one ever puts it directly in line. And I flip my shit when people touch my things and the angles go off. I hate it.
Jim was looking like, I think I used the placemat about a minute ago. And
I'm
I didn't
terrified
put it back.
Now.
I'm all right at home, actually. At home, I'm pretty loose with it, but at work, shit needs to be right.
Mine is, and it's not really that bad. I think a lot of people agree. I get so wound up when people come to my house and just don't put the DVDs back in the cases. Mm-hmm. And if they just put them in another one. Oh, this one's free, so I'll stick Star Wars in, I don't know, the Labyrinth. I'm like, you do realise that's a knock-on effect. So now I've got to look for the Labyrinth. Yeah. And now I've got, yeah. I just think it's disgusting and it winds me up. So I don't invite people out to my house anymore. Mark Rowledge, what question would you guys like to ask a TV or film character if they were real?
I would like to ask, what is the meaning of life, to Groot?
Or Silent Bob.
I would like to ask BoJack Horseman, are you all right, hun?
You're all right? Yeah. You're doing all right?
But how are you really?
I can't top this. I was going to say, I'd like to ask Megan Fox.
Oh, no. Here we go.
Wait.
And I'm just going to leave it there for your imaginations to run wild. John Fitzpatrick, what is your best film or scene that's set on a beach?
Jaws. Come on.
Jaws.
Jaws.
Done.
That's it. If you want to be really nitty-gritty about scenes, any scene in Jaws.
Yeah.
Jess here. What do you believe is the most copied movie ever?
I'm going to say Halloween.
Yeah.
You can use the premise of Halloween in any scary film after that was released. Scream obviously tried to bend the rules a little bit, but it's any horror film is Halloween. Mm. Bad guy, innocent girl that ends up living, whoever takes drugs or drinks or swears, they're off.
Or has sex.
Or have sex, yeah. They're off.
I can't argue. I mean, what was probably the first, I'm trying to think, maybe Scream or something, where it was the teenagers. Yeah. Or I want to think of what would be the first one when they all went to a cabin. Because I keep seeing that. So maybe it was something like Cabin in the Woods was something before. It's probably Cabin Fever or something before that. And they've literally done 20 different takes on it now, and I'm sick of it.
Mm. Or even Evil Dead as well.
That's fair. Yeah, we could go with Evil Dead. Everything is always like, even if it's something like Zombievers, in that film, they still use that premise of going out there and then discovering them. Why don't you just put a tent by the side of the Zombieaver, you know, bay and Zombieaver Bay. Welcome to Zombieaver Bay. But you know what I mean? It's I hate it. It's frustrating to me.
I don't think it will surprise anyone when I say Blade Runner. I think that every dystopic futuristic city that has been put on film since then owes a great debt to Blade Runner. They just copy the aesthetic.
Next question is from Laura Church. Are there any characters that you believe deserve their own spin-off?
Yes.
Oh.
I think it'd be quite interesting to see Meryl Burbank from The Truman Show. Wow. So she sets herself up as Truman's girlfriend, then wife, and goes from there. I'd really like to know what motivated her to take part in this. Mm. So it'd be quite interesting to see her background, her story, exactly why she did this.
It'd be quite funny if it was kind of like a Rashomon thing, so it took place exactly the same time he's having his life. You see it from her side. That'd be cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'd like to know her story.
For me, I'm going to go with Darth Maul. I think now that they're doing Star Wars-based universe films, prequels and so on, I'd like to see Darth Maul's come up. I want to know how he got into the game.
Oh, man, that'd be good. Mine would be the cops from Superbad.
Nice.
I want them to have their own film because I just loved everything they did on screen and I just want an hour and a half of them. Helen Nutter. Are there any films that you love but you feel could have a much better ending? If so, what would you change?
I think it's one that I've talked about before many, many episodes ago, but I really loved In Bruges until the final scene. which I think is a fucking joke. Mm-hmm. I really hate this whole thing about how, you know, is it Ray Fiennes' his character? He has this code that he won't shoot children.
Yeah.
And then he won't shoot this child he sees, but it's not a child, it's a dwarf who's mm-hmm. dressed as a child. And it's one of those things where you think, where I can just sense, I can feel the writer at his typewriter or his laptop in his house so satisfied with this ending at how witty it is that it turns out that it's a dwarf, not a kid. It's like, it's not witty, it's not clever, it's just really fucking stupid. And it destroyed what had been up to that point a brilliant film for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's an awesome choice.
I would have liked to have changed the ending to Starship Troopers because it's obviously it's, you know, they get to fight another day, but it almost feels quite rushed at the end because some other gimp like finds the sort of the nerve ending of this monster. But it kind of it goes past the fact that they've just watched one of their comrades have their brain sucked out.
Mm.
And I would have liked to have seen a little bit more trauma with that, like maybe a bit more of ambiguity. I think it would have been good if it was just, I don't know, like a little bit hopeless, a little bit more of a darker ending. Mm. The film's great, but the ending, I would have loved to have maybe made it a little bit more devastating.
Mm.
I'm not sure if I talked about this with Ben in the pub or on a podcast, but I don't like the end to Prometheus. I hate the fact they shoehorn this alien scene mm-hmm. in just to kind of tie it all together. I didn't need to see that. I thought it was a good standalone film. I have a few references. We didn't need to see it. We have got our own minds that we can think for mm-hmm. ourselves. I would have taken that out. But also in The Dark Knight Rises, I don't think we needed to see, oh, is your name Robin? And then we have that whole...
Yeah.
Oh, that was silly.
That was rushed.
Yeah.
I don't like rushed endings.
No.
Final question. At Moody Longshanks, if you could live inside a cinematic universe, what would you choose? Hers is kind of like Lord of the Rings world.
Okay. I would like to live in Sugar Rush World in Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh,
you
nice.
Get all the cookies and sweeties that you'd like. And as well, you get to race around with like your mates. And yeah, I think that'd be cool. You get like candy canes on tap. What's there not to like?
I guess mine is, I'm kind of fudging it a little bit because it is a TV show, but they have made a film, so it counts. I would love to live in the world of The Simpsons. I would just love to live in Springfield and go and have a beer at Moe's. That kind of stuff. Go and have a crusty burger.
I refute my answer.
Oh, man. I want to hang out with Hans Molman. Oh, I want that answer, but I should have come up with one of my own. That's amazing.
Mm.
I've always wanted to live on the set of Wayne's World because I just want to go to the clubs that they go to, see the bands that they play with the music scene and everything. I just want to play street hockey in the street. I want to go and eat donut men, and that's the world. But Simpsons now. Ben's nailed it. Thanks for all your questions. Keep them coming on Twitter or Facebook. The best way to get through to us is go on skiptheend.co.uk and all the links are on there.
That brings us to the end of episode 52 of the Skip to the End podcast. 2 years down, 2 years under our belts.
It's crazy. It joking aside, it feels very fresh again and it feels new, so it doesn't feel like, oh God, this whole 2 years.
Yeah.
Gemma, two episodes for you. I know it's not 2 years, but still, you know, it must be feeling good.
Of course. How could it not feel good? This is the best podcast in the world.
You're damn right.
Jeez.
Exactly right. One of the cool things about being on the podcast is that we get to do a lot of cool things. We've made a lot of contacts. We get to go places and see things. And one of the things we got to do this past weekend was go to the Bloodstock Open Air Heavy Metal Festival, because Mark and I are big metal fans. And it was a great bit of fun, wasn't it, Mark?
I was disappointed with the lack of metal. I expected a metal festival, so we're going to see like Aluminium, Copper, but it was loads of bands. Yeah. It was absolutely awesome, and I can say this now, and I know they don't plan this as festival organisers, it was bone dry, the sun was shining, mm-hmm. and I can safely say it's the most family kind of feel-good festival I've been to. Yeah. Everyone was loving everyone.
Yeah, so like you say, family friendly, so many kids, like really young kids. We're talking two-year-olds at a heavy metal festival. It was fantastic.
T-shirts on of like Korn and Deftones and stuff with like headphones on. And it was amazing.
And it was great fun. We got to see some really good acts. Gojira and Mastodon especially were superb, weren't they, Mark?
Absolutely unbelievable. Because me and Ben, like you said, are metal fans. I saw Mastodon with Ben about a year ago at Rock City. And I was like, you sold it to me like this is a really good... And I was like, they're not that great, dude. The sound man is to blame for that. It was dreadful. Last night, it's been probably one of the best I put it in my top five performances of all time. Unbelievable. Yeah,
it was so crisp, so brilliant to hear. Just the event itself was great as well. We ran into a few people we knew. So we ran into John Loughran from Raging Speedhorn, who was on one of our previous episodes when we went to Download Festival. We ran into Daniel P. Carter again from the Radio 1 Watch Show.
Yeah, and we literally sat there for like half an hour with a beer just talking about podcasting. And yeah, it was just really good to kind of see what he's up to. And he's literally like us. He's exactly like us. He's got a list of people he wants to speak to and mm-hmm. things he wants to do, and he's doing it all independently. He's going out there and doing what he can.
Yeah, it was a great day out. So, you know, thanks a lot to the organisers for hooking us up there.
And as you said, you know, we get good things. We're going to SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
Bloody hell.
This weekend in New York, as you're listening to this, we are there. We'll put some pictures out, but WWE have given us tickets to go to SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And I'm taking my dad as well,
yeah.
which is crazy. And he doesn't even know what wrestling is. So that'll be interesting to see his reaction to that. Ben, I just wanted to take you back now. This is really like back in the day. Do you remember our listener, Warren John Hughes?
I do.
And he fired in a question saying he's getting married and he wanted to know what film we'd pick for his wedding.
Yes.
This is crazy. As you're listening to this, he's just got married to Ruth, which is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he's actually got married at the Electric Cinema where we saw the room in the actual cinema.
Yeah.
They chose Back to the Future for all of the guests to get married to. And I just want to say, like, it's just weird. It's like that nostalgia thing. I remember that question coming through and I said something stupid like Alien or Mac and Me or something. But the fact that he's now married and they've listened to us from the very beginning. So, you know, congratulations, guys. But then to do it in a cinema, get married there
amazing.
And then watch Back to the Future with all your, you know, like your nan and your granddad and all your auntie. Amazing, isn't it?
That's very, very cool. Congratulations to Warren and Ruth on that one.
Big time.
Congratulations.
But your wedding is important, but not as important as our next episode.
Correct. So what have we got coming up? On the next episode, we're going to be reviewing War Dogs, which is a new film starring Miles Teller and Jonah Hill.
Jonas Hill.
Jonas Hill, as Mark erroneously called him once. And what is going to be our topic of conversation, Gemma?
We're going to be discussing our top three tearjerkers.
Indeed we are. That'll be a tough one. And I think we're going to get a lot of input from the social media on that one. Mark, what's our rewatch?
Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang. And that isn't some sort of cheap porno you get off the black market. It's
I've seen
a very
that
good. Yeah. Have you seen the follow-up? I can't believe how... Well, anyway. Yeah, and that's one that I want the social media to get on because I've seen before, especially with the documentaries on the last episode, people are going out there and watching these films. Jump on board, get on this, watch it, and I want to know your feedback because this is literally a film I think will be really popular.
Yeah. Gemma, who are we going to be mass debating over next time?
We're going to be masturbating over Adam Sandler.
Good God Almighty.
It's happening.
I'm just thinking now, we've got to bring two tissues to the next episode. Because they've got the tearjerkers and we've got the masturbate.
Oh God.
It's going to be a messy episode,
sponsored
isn't it?
Sponsored by Kleenex.
Enough of this. We also have plenty of other stuff. We've got a prize giveaway as per usual. We'll take listener questions. We will also be playing the third and final round of Get Fact. So the winner will be crowned. And we'll then announce a brand new quiz to take over as well. So thanks for listening. See you in 2 weeks.